The new book, Represent, is an interactive and inspiring step-by-step guide showing women how to run for the approximately 500,000 elected offices in the United States. Co-written by Kate Black, former chief of staff at Emily's List, Represent is instructed around a 21-point document called I'm Running for Office, the Checklist. Doubling as a workbook, Represent covers it all, from the nuts and bolts of where to run, fundraising, filing deadlines, to issues like balancing family and campaigning, managing social media, and how running for office can work in your real life. Again, the name of the book is Represent, and we welcome Kate Black to the roundtable this morning. Kate, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's exciting to talk to you.
Nice to have you on the program. So what brought the two of you to write this particular book at this particular time?
You know, after 2016, June and I, two women on opposite ends of the country with completely different lives and completely different jobs, came to that same realization that we needed to do more to engage women in the political process. And June herself thought, should I run for office? And she looked around for tutorials and guides or some sort of roadmap to figure out how this could start, how she could begin a campaign. And she realized that there's not a comprehensive, accessible, enjoyable read out there for women looking to lead. And she kind of found her way to me, where I was sitting at that time as the vice president of Emily's List and later chief of staff. And together we created a how-to guide for women looking to run for office.
Given your experience with Emily's List, it seems like this would be something, this is what you work with every day, right? This is your life in letting people know, letting women know, giving them a roadmap, giving them a toolkit, giving them an idea of how to organize and make a campaign a reality.
It sure is. You know, for over 10 years, I worked in politics and campaigns. For a majority of that at Emily's List, the largest resource for women in politics, but also on Hillary Clinton's first presidential campaign as a political consultant and other Democratic institutions. And so I've worked with numerous candidates up and down the ballot, but so much of my work has been dedicated to electing women and seeing women take offices that I think that we need more women in. And I think one of the questions that you see over and over again is, how is this going to work in my real life? I have kids, I have student debt, I have a job. How can I make a campaign a reality? And I think when you take a step back and you realize that women contain so many multitudes, we are mothers, we are daughters, we are workers, we are doing unpaid labor, running for office can certainly be one of those things. We just have to figure out a way to make it so that leading isn't a luxury, but a common good.
When you look at that idea, of course, one of the things that comes up, and it comes up throughout the book, is the matter of resources. That is a problem for anyone who's running for election. How is it a special challenge for women who are running for election, especially if they're running against an incumbent and they're running for the first time?
Sure. Well, you bring up an excellent point. You know, access to wealth and power is something that definitely has held women back from seeking political office. I mean, in some ways, it's a catch-22. You can't be seen as a viable candidate if you're not raising the money you need to, but you can't raise the money you need to if you're not seen as a viable candidate. So you can see how sort of a circular dialogue can be created in that. Research also shows that women have a harder time raising money, especially women of color. What we do in the book, I think, is narrate a plan for women to look at their immediate circle of friends, family members, that they can maybe ask for that first think about like an angel investment in their campaign. But then those wider circles that probably women are already naturally a part of. So thinking about sororities, alumni associations, maybe daycare pickup groups, maybe some sort of social action that they got involved in, maybe with the Women's March or after 2016, or even something non-political like your church or synagogue or mosque. These are places where you have naturally developed communities, and those are also places where you can foster a campaign.
You have a quote, it's actually in the back of the book, but a quote from Congresswoman Katie Hill and saying, "When I announced a powerful fellow in local politics, sat me down and said, a woman can never win this seat, and I was determined to prove him wrong." I guess two-part question. One, why do people slash men do that? And a second, why does it always have to be a matter of proving instead of, okay, this candidate is the best candidate for the job?
Sure. Well, I mean, to the question of why do men do that, I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that. But, you know, for so long, women have been kept out of the political process. And I think it has a doubling effect of, you know, women not feeling qualified, women not seeing ourselves in leadership. That makes it seem almost unattainable. You know, in a lot of ways, you can't be what you haven't seen before. I think also the kind of political institutions who have an obligation to kind of seek out candidates and recruit, they don't often see women as those natural candidates. And so, you know, I think what the book does is make women feel qualified to know that their own experience is their expertise. Their story and their narrative is what can, you know, propel them into office. It doesn't have to be that someone plucked you out of, you know, your job or your daily life, or, you know, touched you and said, you are the chosen one. It can be your own personal story that puts you into political leadership. And I think that says you are enough. You know, I also think we have real, not only internal kind of feelings about qualification that we need to overcome, but there are also structural barriers in place. We talked about campaign finance. That is an area where, because campaigns are so expensive, it makes it really hard for people who may have multiple jobs or, you know, are not financially secure enough to maybe, you know, quit working for a time to run for office. I think there are other electoral changes that maybe could help, you know, bring more people to the table. And those are things that we also need to look at, too.
I mean, you spend a lot of time in the book talking about money and about money in politics, and just that's a very real part of it. But what many women have shown over the past several years is they can overcome that hurdle.
Absolutely. I mean, we see women raising astounding amounts of money. You know, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, women running for president right now are outraising significant parts of the field. And I think that's fantastic. But what we also, I think, show in the book is that you can run for over 500,000 offices in this country. It's not just, you know, the Oval Office, and it's not the 435 offices in the House of Representatives or the 100 seats in the Senate. There are so many seats down ballot, and part of you figuring out which seats to run for, you have to also understand what kind of time and money and resources those seats are going to take. You know, a race for, let's say, city council in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from, that might look a lot different from running, let's say, for mayor of New York City. Those two races, while, you know, seemingly local, will look very different in terms of the money, time, and energy it takes to win.
Let me ask you about the dedication to the book. We dedicate this book to all the men who have been making decisions about women, without women. Thank you for your years of public service at Tables Without Women Present. Thank you for your time, your energy, and your talent. We appreciate you, and also, we're coming for you. How much of this does get down to a battle of the sexes?
Well, I don't think it's a conversation about who's better. I think for too long, though, we've seen men making decisions about women in this country without women present. We've seen the photographs of all men, you know, meeting rooms talking about paid family leave. We've seen men, you know, voting on items that directly impact the lives of women and our children and the planet. And I think what we're advocating in the book is really that our government should be more representative of the country it serves. You know, women are over half the population in this country, but, you know, almost just a quarter of the seats in Congress are filled by women. Almost half of the country have never had a female governor. You know, I think we've had over 200 years of men running things, and it's time, I think, that we saw some balance.
Right. Absolutely. Now, my question is, does it have to be, or it seems, and you talk about this, that it has to be more than, okay, I'm running because I'm a woman. It has to be more than that.
I think it's about the power of story. I think, you know, women's experiences as caregivers, as working moms, as women who are doing the unpaid labor in this country, as students, as executives, as, you know, women trying to hustle on the side. I think we have so many nuances to our experiences, and it's really about bringing those stories to the table. When you're at a table and there's no one discussing the impact of a policy on women, I think that voice is lacking. Mm. And we need to make sure that there's more robust dialogue that meets us where we are.
And the point you made just a moment ago, which seems so important, is that it doesn't have to be the Congress, it doesn't have to be the Senate. I mean, it can be, certainly. But we have all of these local, state, local, county, town, village elections where women are scarce.
Absolutely. I mean, we need more women running up and down the ballot. And in the book, what we try to do is, you know, look at those over 500,000 offices that you can run for and provide a little bit of guidance about what types of problems those offices can solve, and hopefully match those problems with the very things that are firing up these women candidates. You know, one of the first things I would tell a woman looking to run is to identify that problem that she's seeing in her community. You know, whether it's getting that stop sign put at the end of the block, whether it's, you know, tax reform, or, you know, even larger federal issues. Once you identify that issue, that is what's going to propel your campaign and really, I think, help you build a platform around your movement. And you can identify then the office you want to run for.
The name of the book is Represent, the Woman's Guide to Running for Office and Changing the World. Kate Black, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much.
Again, the book is published by Workman. Represent is the name of the book, The Woman's Guide to Running for Office and Changing the World. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.